AM WBZH.
945 News Talk and Sports.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. More pressures on Israel. Families of hostages still held by Hamas in Gaza protesting inside the Israeli parliament. President Biden says he's outraged and heartbroken by the killing of seven aid workers, including a U.S. citizen, in an Israeli airstrike on a clearly marked convoy in Gaza. Foreign policy advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, Ofer Falk.
This war is a complex war. The incident happened in the middle of the night. It should not have happened.
Search and rescue operation continuing after the big earthquake in Taiwan at a partially collapsed building at the epicenter. What now after a man's arrested in Hamilton County, Ohio, for allegedly from a moving car, tossing out loads of carpenter's nails on the roads? Keenan Reardon with Springfield Police.
We'd like to think this is the end of it, and that would be great. He will be out. He was charged once before, and he's continued on, so we don't know.
A mixed day on Wall Street. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Critics of President Biden's Gaza policy are sending him a message. 47,000 Democratic primary voters voted uninstructed yesterday. Anthony Chergosky teaches political science at UW-La Crosse. He predicted earlier this week the protest vote would be much bigger than 20,000.
It was quite shrewd of them to set that expectation because it will be viewed as a smashing success.
Chergosky spoke with the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network. Wisconsin voters are approving two constitutional amendments that would ban the use of private money for elections and limit who can work on the voting process. Supporters say they're necessary to safeguard election integrity, but opponents say they could leave local elections underfunded and understaffed. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Well, hi there. It's the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke bringing you the Midwest Farm Report live weekday mornings right here on WBZH. It's not just for farmers. It's for anybody that loves food. Tune in 5 a.m. on the Buzz of the North, 9:10 a.m. Hayward.
Your forecast for you and your community. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We love Wisconsin weather and tracking it to keep you updated whenever it changes. Listen for our weather-ready stories so you're always prepared on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Our good friend Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing going to be here to be talking about President Biden's phone call with Xi Jinping. Also, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones going to share some thoughts on Florida, on November's election, Trump's recent comments about, well, we'll get into it. But first, I want to start with Pete Buttigieg. And good on the transportation secretary, because on Tuesday, Secretary Pete, a major win for working people, if you will, a win for safety, a win for sanity, if you will. They announced a new rule for the railroads that all railroad trains would have two people on it, two crew members. Wow. I mean, it's going to make things safer, but I got to tell you, Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's what the unions were asking for. It's what they got. Weren't going to get that under Trump. But the thing that got me, there were more than 13,000 comments from the public on the rule. And interestingly enough, only 60 were against it. So more than 13,000 people said, hey, you know what? Two people on a train? You want to have one? Eventually none? No. And I like what the president of the Washington, D.C. Firefighters Association, David Hoagland, said. According to him, there have been 1,500 derailments since East Palestine. 1,500. You go, I thought we were making the trains safer. Don't hear about these in the corporate-controlled mainstream media, do we? At a rate of, what was it, more than three a day? So Mayor Pete, Secretary Pete, said this is a good day for the safety of the rail workers, the rail passengers, and every American who lives near a rail line all across the country, because America's rails are safer today than they were yesterday. Now, you've got this Federal Railroad Administration provision that is establishing a minimum of two people on all railroads. Doesn't matter if it's this big or that big, freight, passenger, commuter, minimum two. Can I say that again? Minimum of two, because again, they wanted one. Because before the rule, you could have the railroads deciding, well, you know, we just need one. It's a short train, just need one. Now, all trains. Secretary Pete called on Congress also to pass the Railway Safety Act, which is what we really need. We need Congress to actually, I don't know, do their job. I know how shocking that you'd want them to do their job. Now, what's interesting, when I was a kid, you know, we used to play on the tracks a lot. We used to jump on and off the trains. I know you weren't supposed to. And they had a little red caboose at the end. Sometimes it was, most of the time it was red. And there were people all along the train. And, you know, I seem to remember there being more than five, but typically freight trains in the 70s had at least five members. And those trains were generally less than a mile long. You look at the trains that are going now, on average, they run 2 miles long. And at most, you've got two people now. Sometimes they wanted one. It's quite remarkable when you stop and you think about what we've allowed to happen in the name of acquiescing to corporate wants, to corporate needs. When the lobbyists say something, they jump. Now, what I find interesting about this ruling is... the railroads, they were lobbying states saying, hey, you can't make individual rules because, you know, this should be a federal thing. So they were trying to stop states, of which there are, I think, 10 states that have already said you have to have two. So their argument to the states that we're going to follow were, well, no, this is a federal issue. You states can't do this. And now the federal government has stepped in and done what needs to be done. And you go, this is good, right? It's a good start. It's a good step in the right direction. Thinking about safety. I mean, it only really happened because we had that massive, very public tragedy in East Palestine. The unions have been fighting for this for at least 12 years. I remember being on our labor history tour back in 2013 and this being front and center to some of my Teamster buddies saying, look, they want to take this down to one train and we're fighting them. And the only reason that it didn't happen, let me be very clear about this. The only reason that this didn't have already be done and have one person on a train is because the unions fought for it. The unions fought to have two people. Now, personally, I would have liked to have seen three. A 2 mile long train. I got to tell you, I don't know how you do it. As someone who spends a lot of time in rail yards, these are big, massive things, especially when you're talking about the inspection times are cut down to virtually nothing. The manpower cut down to virtually nothing, but profits. Oh my goodness. Profits. Whew, wow. Through the roof. And that's all corporate America really cares about. Wall Street wants more. They're going to cut costs at every opportunity, slash and burn. They don't care about you or your family. They care about the bottom line, how much they can line their shareholders' pockets with. So when I see this minor victory, and I look, this to me is a minor victory. You take the win. You say, about time. Good on this administration. Maybe we should do some more. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Do you see this as the win that I see it as? Or could we have gone, I don't know, a bit further? And maybe shouldn't we be calling Congress to say, hey, that Railway Safety Act that's been languishing, maybe pass it. Get it on Biden's desk so he can sign it, so we can have safer communities. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back with Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, President Biden spoke with Chinese President Xi Jinping over the telephone. First time, evidently, they've talked or have spoken since last November at the APEC summit. Kind of interesting that they haven't talked in this length of time. Now, not surprising, because evidently it was also reported they didn't talk from November of 22 to November of 23. So the bat phone, I got to wonder, not ringing off the hook, but they had a lot of things to go over, and here to share some thoughts on what the president brought up with Xi Jinping, and you know how we are going to respond to the aggression that we are seeing coming out of China. That's why I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you.
So what do you make of the reporting coming out of the call? First one since last November, but some hot-button topics, you know, trade, artificial intelligence, Taiwan, lots of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I will just say that it's always a good idea to have an open line of dialogue, even with your competitors and challengers. It's important to do that to avoid even more serious misunderstandings about stuff. So I'm all for this. I think that this is that it's helpful to have those conversations. Just because you're having those conversations doesn't mean that you're going to come to terms on issues. And I think that's important to understand as well. And in many cases, and I think this is now true with the U.S.-China relationship, is that we're going to agree to disagree on a range of issues, from the future of Taiwan to the economic practices of the Chinese government, or from the Chinese perspective, the economic practices of our government, of the flow of fentanyl, of who's going to regulate AI, and the list goes on. You know, the South China Sea. There's a lot of other things, but it is important at the highest level, I think, to have that line of communication open, because as you pointed out, it wasn't for a long time. And then really strange things can happen. You don't want that to happen. But I do think it's worth noting that I don't perceive the Biden administration to be backing down on its approach to China at all. It still seems to have the same array of policies, just also having conversations with the government now.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, the Biden folks can back down. I mean, ultimately, their future is rebuilding manufacturing. Their future is reshoring jobs and having an economy that benefits us too, instead of what's been a very one-sided relationship with China under this idea, well, they're just catching up. Well, they've not only caught up, they've surpassed us in manufacturing. And now they're complaining that we're somehow
trying to harm their economy when you look at the fact that we have lost millions of good-paying manufacturing jobs in this country and communities across this country are still hurting because of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And folks may have missed this because there's been a lot going on, obviously, domestically and elsewhere. But the government of China filed a case against the United States at the World Trade Organization on the provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act, designed to promote clean energy manufacturing in the United States at the exclusion of providing benefits for some Chinese and other foreign products. And according to China, they think that goes against the WTO. Whether it does or doesn't is really immaterial, because I'm just going to say this, no one cares what the WTO thinks about this anymore.
And I've been saying that for years, Scott. We got to get away from that, because again, right. I come back to, I'm a firm believer in domestic production for domestic consumption. If we're going to move towards the green economy, solar panels, windmills, geothermal, EVs, all that stuff, we can make it here, and we should be making it here, and they should be doing the same in their backyard.
That's right. That's exactly right, which is fine. And none of our policies would prevent China from supplying its own market. And I think this is the rub. It's that for decades, the Chinese government has subsidized its solar industry, has subsidized its EV industry. We did a big report on this a few weeks ago, and it has a massive head start on all of this. And they've used Western technology, some of which they've borrowed, some of which they've bought, a lot of which they've stolen. And they have discriminatory practices. They'll ship it anywhere. And of course, developers in the United States and elsewhere are happy to get those Chinese solar panels because they're basically sold at below cost. And, you know, which is kind of like a drug to those developers. And so it's very ironic for that reason that China's filing this case at the WTO, because it actually should be the reverse. And I'm glad that the Biden administration seems to be positioning itself as number one, defending these policies, number two, in some cases, doubling down on them, but also not backing away. Yep. From the tough on China just because Xi Jinping says, well, we don't like this.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, as you were talking, my mind went back to the Obama years when we were talking about, you know, solar, and they were spending some money to try and, you know, build a solar industry in this country. And China was allowed to just come in and wipe it all out by dumping really cheap panels on the market, much cheaper than U.S. companies could make, and just destroyed those investments. I hope, and I'm hopeful this administration, and it appears they are not going to allow that to happen again.
Yeah, there's still a couple of decisions that need to be made on that. But a good example was this company called Suniva in Georgia. It basically decided to shut its doors in 2016, 2017. Because of those Chinese imports. They were just overwhelming it. They could not get any market share at all. And so they idled their operations. You know, they recently announced they're going to start them back up thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act and the demand that's being created here. And also the fact that many of the incentives are limited to Made in America solar panel products. Now, we have to make sure that all of the supply chain is made in America, and there's some tightening up of laws. We need to do that. We also need to end the moratorium on tariffs being placed on imported solar products that the Biden administration announced 2 years ago. That's set to expire this summer.
Right.
And so if those two things are true, then you're right. Then we are going to be able to regrow this in the United States, which we should, because we invented this technology in the 1950s and we were the pioneers. And then we literally just gave it away, both because we didn't foster demand for solar and our trade policies just allowed others to take everything.
And I'll go a step farther. Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
I blame him for most of this, because had we followed the Carter policies, Had Carter won again in 1980, maybe we would be a greener society. But one of the first official acts Ronald Reagan did when he came into the White House was rip those solar panels off the White House and go back to good old-fashioned gas, or it was oil, actually. Back to good old-fashioned oil.
Yeah. Look, we've had a lot of unforced errors along the way, but we do have this suite of policies now with the domestic investments, the consumer incentives, and also some of the trade actions. And as you point out, this desire on the part of the administration to say, we're going to make it here. Yes, we're going to have green energy, but it's going to be made in the United States. We're simply not going to substitute Middle Eastern oil for made in China solar panels. Right. And I think that's the important distinction.
One of the things I found interesting that they did talk about was AI, the artificial intelligence, you know, the risks associated with it. I got to imagine how, if, or who will regulate it, especially given the fact that there are some reports going around that the Chinese are doing what the Russians did in 2016. Let me just put it a different way. There's some disinformation, some misinformation, some stuff coming out of potentially out of China that I don't know, not good for the Biden administration.
This is all true. China does want to write the rules of how artificial intelligence is deployed, which would have dire consequences for Americans as consumers, as people who care about privacy, or economically, because the rules would be designed to support an authoritarian approach to this, okay, that's led by China. The underbelly of that, and you were getting to this, is that China is already utilizing sophisticated tools on social media through AI-generated kind of bots and other things to try to influence our election the same way that Russia tried to do in 2016. And this is no joke. This is intelligence agencies that have reported this with high confidence. And the thing that may be surprising is that they're trying to lift up Trump and put down Biden.
Right. Well, that wouldn't be surprising to me, Scott. Not surprising at all, because look, Trump, was a dog that barked really loudly, but had no bite. I mean, there were some tariffs put on, but on the grand scheme of things, should have gone much further. His rhetoric was much hotter, but didn't. It was a lot of talk, a lot of hot air, no real action.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously that's a story that hasn't been told to most of the American people, right? Because they just hear the bluster. But it is true that, there was a limited tariff policy. But he ultimately made a trade deal with China and stopped escalating the tariffs. And that trade deal performance was terrible, by the way. China never bought what it says it was going to buy. And Biden kept the tariffs, in some ways made them smarter, in other ways enlisted allies to clamp down with sanctions on China, which have been much more devastating, really, to Chinese technological development than anything Trump ever did. So I do think that, I think that they may be trying to tip it this way, but it points out the dangers of an authoritarian regime being able to harness the power of AI and technology to influence, obviously, a political outcome, but also to have information about the daily economic activities of Americans and what have you. That just doesn't seem like a smart thing to do. So it's important for the Biden administration to be raising that up and to also make sure that we're writing the rules on AI and that we're doing this in a way that doesn't give anyone, whether it's tech companies or China, too much power to utilize this for bad. Rather than progress.
Yeah, I was just on Tuesday. You had RFK Jr. saying that they're putting 5G chips in all of this stuff, and they're going to connect the world, and they're going to have your bank accounts, and they're going to have your digital currency. And there's this fear on the right that we're going to allow the kind of social scoring that they do to happen here because of the technology that they control. I think that's a very real fear and something that we should be taking on, especially if China's the one controlling it.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's, we don't need to talk about TikTok, but that debate's ongoing.
Yeah.
And it's the same issue there, is that there's an algorithm that gets kids addicted to this stuff. And if you manipulate that, the company showed that it could when the House was voting on this, that is really dangerous for looking ahead at civic institutions, at democracy, and at privacy in the United States. Absolutely.
Before you go, I got to share this with you. Because a few weeks ago, I was scrolling through, wasting time watching motorcycle crash videos, since my son and I are going to be doing the Tale of the Dragon here in June. So I'm watching these crash videos, wasting time, and up pops on my screen, Charleston Chiefs Jeff Hansen jersey. Anyone who's a Slapshot fan like I am will know the Charleston Chiefs. So I said, $20, that's fairly cheap. So I'm assuming this is, a store, and so I bought a couple of them. And I got to tell you, I'm a little embarrassed by this, Scott. In fact, I'm a lot embarrassed by it. So I forgot about it. I bought them, and this is a while ago. I forgot about them. And all of a sudden, I come home, and on my porch is a big bag that says Temu on it. I didn't sign up for Temu.
Yeah.
I didn't want anything from Temu. But somehow we've now gone around that. It's not even a matter of going to the Temu app. People are now opening stores selling you Temu crap, and you're thinking it's here. I mean, at some point, don't the policies have to protect consumers? Because I didn't want to buy anything from Temu.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting very clever at the disguise. And believe me, Rick, we know where your heart and where your wallet is, man. So there's no shame in all of this. And this has happened to all of us, I will say, where you get snookered like that. But I will say it's not surprising for two reasons. One is that Temu is advertising everywhere. You cannot miss it, no matter what site you're on.
Yeah, and when I see it, I move away from it. Yeah. I run from it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's clever too. As you said, it's sometimes quite disguised, and that's also driving up advertising costs for everybody else because they're just buying everything up. That's number one. Number two is that there's a set of policies that favors Temu right now because they can ship goods direct to consumer. They don't have to pay a tariff. They escape all sorts of inspections that way. And that's a loophole in the law called de minimis, which we can change. Congressman Earl Blumenauer from Oregon has legislation to do that. There's a lot of support for it. It was a recommendation of the Select Committee on China. So hopefully we can get that done because you're right. There is not a lot of information for consumers out there on what is, what is this Temu? Is this not Temu? Is this coming from China? Has this been inspected? Did they pay the tariffs? There's really no way to do that right now. And so you're left out there swimming in this sea of uncertainty, and stuff like that will happen. Yeah. So we got to change it is the bottom line.
No. And then, my son went on the Temu app and said, well, if you would have gotten it from Temu, it was only $3. So you could take some solace in knowing that there is probably maybe an American who started a store here locally that made $17 off you. And I go, well, thanks for that. It made me feel even worse again.
We'll get you next time, right?
There you go. So last question on this. How do we push to fix this? And who do we push?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is, again, I think there's two things. I think there's a real question about should Temu be able to operate here and under what circumstances? That's number one. Number two is that we do have to fix this loophole in the law that allows Temus to ship goods directly to consumers without paying tariffs and without inspections. And this was a law that, you've traveled overseas. I have too. You fill out your customs declaration. If it's under $800, you can bring it in duty free. This is what this is. And obviously that is not what Temu is doing.
Right.
They're not coming back from another country. They're they're using this to try to get an advantage over local stores or even retailers, honestly, like Target or what have you. And I have little, you know, I have little empathy for the Targets and Walmarts of the world, but they are getting screwed by this because at least when they're doing it, they have to pay the taxes and the tariffs on it and have to have the goods expenses. So this de minimis reform, which is hard to say, that Congressman Earl Blumenauer has from Oregon is an important first step. When we got to get it over the finish line.
There you go. Call the guy with the bow tie.
That's right.
Scott, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff.
Thank you so much, Rick. Keep up the great work. Appreciate it.
Our good friend Scott Paul. Want to hear your thoughts. Have you gotten taken like I was? And I didn't really want to come tell that story. Kind of embarrassing. Kind of angering as well, which is why we do need to get a fix. Want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones will be here. Back after this.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. In the overnight, clouds and blustery north winds up around 30 at 35 miles per hour, with upper 20s expected by sunrise. On Thursday, we'll see some light snow and flurry and sprinkle chances. Clouds and breezy with highs in the upper 30s to near 40. It's 33 at our studios.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So who said Republicans don't have a platform? Who said they don't have any policy chops? Who said they're not going to get anything done? Evidently, House Republicans right now, as we speak, they are pushing to rename Dulles Airport after Donald Trump. So we could potentially have two of the worst presidents in my lifetime named after airports in the Washington, D.C. area, which will make it that I'll never fly out of D.C. It is what it is. But some interesting news coming out of Florida. The Supreme Court of Florida said, yeah, Florida, you can have your six-week abortion ban, but you're going to be able to put it on the ballot. So the voters may actually decide, hey, we actually want this. And this could drive people to the polls. There's talk, potentially, Florida could be in play for Democrats and Biden this November because of this issue. And here to share some thoughts on that, I've asked our good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, to come share some thoughts. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's always great to be with you, Rick.
So thoughts on Trump Airport?
No. Just that's all I got
to
say.
No, because no, my mind goes, you put his name on it, it's bound to go broke. So, yeah, you know, like Truth Social.
Exactly. Who's going to want to fly in and out? I mean, it's just nuts.
But this thing in Florida, this is kind of a big deal because, you know, I was expecting the Supreme Court to say, yeah, you could have your six-week ban, but not go as far to put it on the ballot. So do you think that Florida's going to be in play?
You know, look, I think that it's very possible, Rick. I mean, remember, those were two separate cases now. People need to remember that. Two separate cases, one that upheld a six-week ban, which has so many people in Florida up in arms, and the second one, putting women's reproductive rights on the ballot in November. That's got Republicans up in arms. That is the last thing that they wanted to happen down there. And count on the fact that the Republican legislature and governor will do everything possible to try to get it off the ballot. But if it stays on the ballot, Rick, I think that that is a motivating factor. It has been the critical motivating factor for Democrats over the last couple of years, and I think it will be again. And yeah, despite all of the history and the organization that Florida Republicans have, I think you could see this state being in play. Just look what happened in Alabama in the special election up in North Alabama when we won that race, because women's reproductive rights, abortion, IVF, it was all on the table.
Yeah. Now, the part that I find interesting is Florida did what Ohio wanted to do, and they've changed the threshold at which you have to get. It's now, I guess it's 60% of the vote for this to pass. If I'm not mistaken, Ohio, they didn't get it passed, but they sure wanted to.
Right. That's right. And the main thing is just the issue alone. I mean, that is such a motivating factor, not only for Democrats, but also for independents and more moderate Republicans. They do not like what Florida is doing. They don't like what Alabama's doing. They don't like what Ohio's been doing. They didn't like what Kansas was doing. That's kind of where it all started back in Kansas a few years ago. So I just think that with that being the way it is, and that cuts across so many demographics, that it is going to be something that at the very least, Republicans are going to have to sink a boatload of money into, which will free up Democratic resources elsewhere. And make no mistake, I'll tell you who, not just Trump and the Republican Party that's scared about this. Senator Rick Scott's got to be concerned about this too. He is so far out there on this issue. He's got to be concerned about this. Even if Joe Biden didn't carry it, Rick Scott could be in trouble with this just because of this issue.
Yeah, I mean, because you look at some of the stories coming out of, let's say, Texas, for instance. In fact, we just talked about it. You know, some elected officials showed up to a meeting where they're literally talking about the death penalty for women who choose to go to have an abortion, and not just the actual surgical procedure, but the chemical, taking the Plan B, all of this stuff, and my mind immediately goes, contraception is not far behind as a whole to be attacked by these folks. So it seems like this should be a motivating issue for women who would like to have control of their own future.
You know, Rick, you're absolutely right. And what folks need to remember is that for so long, after Roe versus Wade was overturned in the Dobbs decision, and people started sounding the alarm that it could be IVF, it could be contraception. There is no end, because what Republicans did in states like Alabama and what they've now done in Florida, they've not thought through the ramifications of what they're doing. They were just pandering to the right, and they did not think this thing through. Alabama legislators have said that. And the IVF ruling out of Alabama, which basically said that a frozen embryo that is there for IVF purposes is a child for purposes of constitutional protections. That changed everything. And people started, thinking to themselves and waking up to the fact that, gosh, these people are right. They could be coming for contraception. They could be coming for IUDs. They could be coming for any number of things. And that has really been a mobilizing factor. Yeah. The IVF ruling out of Alabama really, I think, kind of jump-started the thought that this is more than just simply about a procedure. This goes far beyond that.
Well, it's always been about control. And I've said that for two decades now doing this program. There is a faction of the Republican Party, which has now grown to be almost the entire party, that wants women back in the kitchen, gays back in the closet, and minorities back in the fields. And we shouldn't be surprised by that, because they're telling this. In fact, Trump, taking credit for it. I'm waiting for him to come out and call for a national abortion ban, which is interesting, because this was supposed to kick things back to the states, but they don't like what the states are doing, so they want to kick it back to the federal government. Am I missing something here with the Republican, with their ideology?
No, you're not missing anything. They are. They don't have an ideology. They are trying to scramble to develop something that they believe the people of America will accept. And the only thing I think that the majority of the people in this country will accept is something that will kind of reinstate Roe versus Wade, or something similar. The Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision, which followed Roe. That's what America will accept. And they really have no plan. that's the interesting thing that you're seeing with this. They're not really offering a response. They're doubling down and hoping they'll get over the crisis.
Now, what's interesting is we're just a few days out from Easter. You know, the resurrection or rebirth, you know, try to be better people kind of thing, the big Christian holiday. And yet on Tuesday, I see Donald Trump give a speech in Michigan where he says, quote, "The Democrats say, please don't call them animals. They're humans. I said, no, they're not humans. They're not humans. They're animals." This is a guy who was president, wants to be president again, calling, you know, immigrants, people who want to come to this country and make a life for themselves and help make this country better, calling them animals and not human. Now, I guess this isn't a far reach, you know, from they're all criminals and all of that stuff. But, you know, this kind of rhetoric, is this good for us as a nation?
No, it's not. It breeds violence. It stokes violence. It dehumanizes people. And while you made an interesting comparison that this is the guy who was president saying this, I now see it as this is the guy who is trying to sell Bibles on the internet. Okay, that is not. He needs to read some of those scriptures. That is not. There is nothing in the Bible that would come remotely close to dehumanizing a person the way that Donald Trump continues to do that with this. And again, Rick, and you and I've talked about this some, when I lived through Jim Crow. I lived through political officials dehumanizing African-Americans in this country. And look what happened. Bombings that killed children. Emmett Till was killed for just whistling at someone. You know, when it stokes violence, and people need to understand that is clearly all but an absolute call for violence when that happens.
Well, I mean, he just not recently said that and doubled down on saying that there would be a bloodbath if he loses.
Yes.
Violence clearly is something that he is stoking the flames of.
He has a history of doing that all the way going back to 2016, where he was asking his supporters to beat up hecklers at his, at his rallies. It's a really frightening place to be in this country, I think, right now, where somebody like Donald Trump, who is under indictment, has to have such an incredible gag order issued by a judge because of everything he says in criticizing witnesses or prosecutors or judges' families. You know, people hear different things in that, and they hear calls to violence and calls to do harm. And the fear is that somebody will take them up on that, just as they did on January 6th.
I believe he knows that. And that's part of this dog whistle. But the problem is the dog whistle is a bullhorn. That's the problem. This guy has such a megaphone and gets so much attention that this radical stuff, this crazy stuff he says, we constantly report on. Now, I bring up the fact that he calls people animals and not human, because there is a difference between this guy and the guy who's sitting in the White House right now, who I think is a decent human being. I think this is someone who truly cares about people and wants to find a solution to what's going on at the border. And not someone who just wants to use it as something to divide us.
There's no doubt about that. Anybody that's known Joe Biden for a long time, and I have known him for a very long time, knows he's one of the most compassionate men that in public service that has been in the last century. He cares about people. He wants to find common ground. He will clearly reach across. And I think one of the best indications of that is that he really sought out compromise and try to work with folks when they had the immigration bill that James Langford from Oklahoma and Chris Murphy from Connecticut and Kristen Sinema from Arizona kind of hammered out. And it was, you know, the Democrats gave a lot on that to try to stem the tide, to do something about the border. But yet it was Donald Trump who decided to kill it. It's not the first time he's done it. It's actually the second that I can count on since one when I was in the Senate. And it just really called out where Trump and many other Republicans are on this. They do not want to solve a problem. They just simply want to continue to create the crisis and use it as a political cudgel.
No, no. And look, I think they learned their lesson from Roe. I don't think most Republicans thought the Supreme Court would go as far as it did. I think most Republicans, at least the ones I talked to, thought that this would be the death of a thousand paper cuts. They'd move towards it. It wasn't going to be a complete changing of the law and a complete tearing up of the past of decided law. And they've learned we can't have that because they need the issue more than the solution.
They need the issue. They've always had the issue, and Roe has been the backstop. They could demagogue and go as far as they needed to go, knowing that Roe versus Wade was the backstop that they would run against, and they could whatever they said was not going to take place, not going to come to being because of Roe versus Wade. That's exactly why so many in Alabama were saying, gosh, we just didn't think about this. We didn't think this through when the IVF ruling came down. It's been a common refrain.
Yeah, well, here's the common refrain that I get. I didn't think they meant me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's always somebody else. It's always this, that, or the other. But getting back though, Rick, I do believe, I may be wrong, but I really believe it's going to be continuing to be an issue. And that's why I really believe that Florida, there are going to be some resources put there that is going to be in place. People are going to start to mobilize in Florida like they have not done in a long, long time.
No, there's an opportunity, especially when you talk about the fact, Senator, that this administration is spending a lot of resources in a lot of southern states to build manufacturing, to move towards a green economy. There's a lot of investment happening in this country that I don't know we're talking enough about. I just had a guest on yesterday talking about, the U.S. economy, the rebound is kind of incredible, especially when you look at the rest of the world and how the rest of the world's still struggling. And yet we've done fairly well. Do we have problems? Absolutely. I'll be the first one to say, look, we've got years to catching up to do. But where we are compared to everyone else seems kind of incredible. Most people don't realize it.
Well, they don't realize it because they still are not feeling it completely yet. But I think that is beginning to change. People are spending money, Rick. I mean, they're still spending money. It's one reason why inflation has been somewhat in check, because the consumers are spending money. Their wages have gone up. People are, the economy has defied all expectations when you've had somewhat high inflation, but also low unemployment and interest rates a little bit high. This is an economy like the experts have never, and political folks have never seen before, and they're getting used to it. Our GDP is growing. Our everything about this economy is going in the right direction, and it is sitting there. And as you said, it's still the strongest economy in the world. But I do believe that people are starting to see that. If you look at the trend lines, are going in the right direction, where people are now feeling better about where they are. The biggest problem I see is that there are folks in the media still saying that this is a lousy economy. It can teeter on this or teeter on that. People hear it and they parrot it. But at the end of the day, I think they're feeling a lot better.
I still have people emailing me telling me recession's around the corner. And look, eventually there will be one. We can guarantee that it always happens, but it's not today. It's not tomorrow. But here's the thing, and I want to pick up on what you just said, because the right-wing media in this country is powerful. They control cable news. They control talk radio. They're talking to working people much more and much more intimately than Democrats are. I still think Democrats are relying on, 1950s, 60s kind of technology, whereas the right, man, they're everywhere all at once and spewing this message. And look, I think Democrats have to do a better job of getting out and taking credit for things.
No, the Republicans have a rage machine. Okay. They tap into rage. They tap into anger. They tap into fear. And they were able to do this when inflation was in fact at its, the highest level it has been in decades. Forget the fact that we were still lower than any other civilized country in the world. But the fact is we had high inflation, and they just won't let it come down. They just, at this point, They will not give you and people facts. They will just simply continue to describe and throw out fear-mongering adjectives that keep people worked up. But, no. You know, folks, we've always seen a lag time with how the economy reacts and how people feel. And I think we're beginning now. That lag time has now gotten shorter and shorter, and I think we're beginning to see a beginning of a cycle where folks are going to really feel what has happened. Now, having said that, there is a segment of this country that will never acknowledge that things are going good. I'll give you a good example. Our leadership in Alabama, on the one hand, they will absolutely dog Joe Biden and the economy, but then they will turn around and say, but let me tell you, in Alabama, we're doing great. Our unemployment's at the low. We're bringing in jobs. We're doing all this as if they think that they did it. They didn't do hardly a damn thing. But the fact is, that's how they justify this. And they will just talk out of both sides of their mouth.
It's kind of like those representatives who voted against the infrastructure bill going and say, look what I brought you.
Exactly. Very same. We hear it a lot in Alabama.
Lastly, before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on a Supreme Court case that's going to be heard in April. I don't know if you spent a lot of time or any time on this Grants Pass versus Johnson case, where it appears to me from, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but it appears that, you know, if they get their way, and this Grants Pass gets overturned from the lower courts, that we could criminalize homelessness. And for me, again, we spend a lot of time, energy, and you know, bad ideas on punishing the homeless. I'm hoping there's a point at which the Supreme Court goes, no, you've got to do something to help the homeless, you know, kind of moving us in a better direction. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this case.
You know, Rick, I'm not that as familiar with that case. I will say that I can never really figure this Supreme Court out right now. Just when you think that they are so far down a rabbit trail to the right, you'll see a couple of them pull back a little bit. I think we've seen some things recently. So we'll see. We'll follow it. I'll look at it a little bit. Maybe we can talk about it a little bit more the next time. And I'll check it out a little bit, because that's just one I haven't followed much.
Yeah, we had a guest on the other day talking about it, and it's infuriating the fact that we could look. If I'm ever homeless, as I said, maybe I just show up to the police department and surrender to them. But Doug, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
All right, buddy. Anytime. Take care.
Thanks so much, our good friend Doug Jones. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the night that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his now famous I've Been to the Mountaintop speech at the Mason Temple in Memphis, Tennessee. He was speaking in support of striking sanitation workers who were members of AFSCME Local 1733. During his speech, he said, "Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't really matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and He's allowed me to go up to the mountaintop, and I've looked over, and I've been to the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, will get to the promised land." The next day, Dr. King was murdered by an assassin's bullet at the Lorraine Motel. In 2015, AFSCME President Lee Saunders wrote about the importance of remembering Dr. King's legacy to today's labor movement. "Let's honor Dr. King by taking a page out of his playbook. Let's give workers the power to reshape our struggling economy and improve the lives of all Americans by negotiating better wages and benefits. Yes, unions are still the answer, the path to the middle class, for every American and not just African Americans. We follow Dr. King's path. We pursue his dream by organizing. It is the way forward for our union and the nation." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I find it interesting that Doug Jones brought up RFK Jr. Because, look, I don't talk about RFK Jr. because I think he's a crackpot. In fact, you know, on Tuesday, gave a speech, talking about, they're going to have 5G. There's going to be 5G, and 5G is going to control everything. They're going to control your mind. They're going to control your money. You're going to control all this stuff. And you go, potentially, yeah. We potentially, if we allow the wrong people to be in power, potentially, yeah, we could end up like China with the social scores. We could end up in a place where everything is easily at the press of a button, trackable and traceable. Kind of is today already. We've already, the ship's kind of sailed on most of this since we use our credit cards. I'm against digital currency. And I am, to be honest. But we all use our credit cards for everything we buy because we're going to get points. They've enticed us with trinkets and little things to go, oh yeah, I'm willing to allow someone to oversee everything I buy. Sure, why not? It's good for me. And look, this is one of those things where you go, at some point, maybe we have policies, maybe we have a political discussion in a democracy that says, hey, maybe we handle this in a better way. And I look at what RFK Jr. is throwing out, and like he does. The reason I don't talk about him is because I think he's a crackpot. In fact, so much of a crackpot that Tulsi Gabbard turned him down for VP. And also, conservative media kind of soured on him as well because, he's not just beating up on Joe Biden anymore. He's an independent now, so that, done, next, we don't need you. And I look at him and I go, look, some of the economic stuff he talks about, yeah, stuff we should be dealing with. Some of the stuff that you go, well, that was a kernel of sanity. What about the rest of it? And look, the 5G thing scares me too. Because 5G is how computers are going to talk to each other. It's how our cars are going to have vehicle avoidance software. I'm personally not thrilled with a lot of what potentially could happen. And I come back to potentially. We can change those things. We can put things in place to ensure that it doesn't happen. We just haven't done it because we've been so occupied with the really important issues. Like who people sleep with or, what bathroom they go to or if whatever they put on as clothing. That seems to be the real important stuff. Instead of the fact that we are a decade behind on regulating AI. Robotics is, we're missing the boat on that. The job losses that are going to come, and they are going to come, we haven't even begun to talk about how we're going to replace that. So when the UAW comes out with the idea of a 32-hour work week, everyone loses their flipping mind because they can't imagine anything else than what's right in front of us. Can't imagine that we could have a 32-hour work week. Can't imagine that maybe we could have a 24-hour work week. But no, we can't have those conversations because, again, we're too busy worried about everybody else. And I find it interesting, the point I made to Doug Jones is people start to be concerned. The abortion issue didn't matter to a lot of people until it was them. And it's like a lot of this stuff. Most people don't care about it until it's them. Until you go, what, me? No, that was supposed to be for them. Yeah, you're now them. Congratulations. Welcome to them-dom. Question is when do we say no more? When do we start talking about what's really important and get away from the outrage machine? Take off the red hats and the blue hats and start talking about how we're going to have a better place for our kids, even if they want to dress weird. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, download the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. You'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.